This week, the man who used to run Channel 4 and who went on to chair the regulator Ofcom in the UK said he would never have made the reality show Married at First Sight and he wouldn't touch the format with a barge pole.
I feel broken, disrespected, lonely.
Publicly known that it all is not well. I was a drug addict and an alcoholic, so very high, very drunk, very all of those things.
Because one thing I'm not is a liar.
My guest today went on it, and he's been sober for a while now. He's about to tell you from the inside whether the man who ran Channel 4, Ofcom, the BBC and ITV is right about the show. This is Outcast World.
Queer politics.
When Farage says jump, Labour might say how high.
And it's not true. It's offering people false hope.
Sex.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours.
And culture.
What do you want, homie? When we get together, we be simple. Simple. Be simple for me.
He will, go nosh himself off.
This is Outcast World.
So, the context, because the show that we're about to discuss is not just weathering some allegations, it is literally on trial in the media at the moment. A BBC Panorama investigation last month set out allegations from former contributors that two people were raped by on-screen partners during the filming of the show and a third was subjected to a non-consensual sex act. Some reporting has said that after Channel 4 were informed, they broadcast the episodes anyway. The people involved deny the allegations and police have asked anyone who is affected to come forward. Channel 4 has now eventually pulled every single episode. A major sponsor has walked away and the regulator is reviewing the broadcaster's own welfare report. Now, my guest today is neither an accuser nor one of the accused. Thomas Hartley went on the 2022 series, and what he gives us is the rarest thing in this whole story. The view from inside the format, and it doesn't run the way you might expect from one of its most outrageous contestants.
What do we mean by drug addict? I mean, are we talking the broad spectrum of stuff, or are we just you weren't bothered or what? Because there's a spectrum, isn't it? You know, a lot of people
no,
would do that.
Daily user, alcoholic, drinking every day, wow. Using every day. Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't in a good place.
10 years of
that. Oh wow! So how did you end up in that place? Because that doesn't happen overnight, does it? Getting into that sort of position.
I think, obviously, as you know, being a LGBTQIA-focused podcast, that in our community, it is very toxic and there's a lot of trauma around being queer, the climate, you know, life. And I think it was just an easy route to sort of not deal with emotions and not deal with the confronting things that come with life. And it's, you know, do I want to deal with it or kind of take this and that'll stop them feelings? But it doesn't stop them, does it? It just masks them temporarily and... Yeah, that was where I was at. I was using it. It was my therapy. It was my thing.
So you used to be a mental health nurse, didn't you?
I did. Yeah,
you did. Isn't that interesting? Mm. The path that you've been on, because you're probably more than aware of what was kind of going on, weren't you? You're probably this isn't right, and I understand the reasons why, but you're still kind of numbing the pain, I guess.
Well, I think you convince yourself that you're okay and that it's okay for you because you're not in the same position as the people that you can see who are having psychotic episodes. But then I was having psychotic episodes and sort of being oh, no, it's fine. It'll pass because I'm functioning. Yeah. I'm still functioning. I'm still working. I'm still doing all the things that I need to be doing to get on with life. But I wasn't really.
Yeah. Yeah, it was difficult.
Yeah, so... it was.
How did you get into the position where you're this can't go on, I want to change this, I know there's something wrong, you know, because you've got all them insights, haven't you? You've seen this happen to other people, not just around you, but at work, you know it from top to bottom. So what was the point where you were I've got to fucking change?
I mean, you know, losing people that you love and falling out with your friends, watching your family's misery and the pain that causes for them, and then just looking at myself and being I'm, you know, not to sound egotistical, but I'm so talented and I've got so much to give to the world. I'm an activist, I'm a performer, all of those things. And that's what I wanted to be known for. And you lose that because what you're then known for is this mess that's just a bit of a novelty, a bit of a laugh and a joke. And it was just, I think you've got to hit rock bottom to find the way up. I'd sort of just hit rock bottom, really.
Yeah. Was there a moment then where you were that's it.
I think just the threat of losing like family and losing the life that I sort of had, and having no money and just being like not able to function,
yeah,
really. I think it just was a combination. It got worse and worse and worse, because at first I was still thriving in a sense whilst using. So I convinced myself that I was going to be all right. And I wasn't, because it was getting worse and worse, and it just took over my life. Yeah.
You're close to your mum, aren't you? I don't know if I see your mum on your socials as much as I did.
She's
but
literally
I always did.
Sat
like
next
a double
to
act.
Me right now. She's is sat she? Next to me here. Inside. would be like, yeah, there she is.
Oh, I love her. So there was sobriety you got on that journey. There's a weight loss journey as well.
It was a magic potion. That's what it was.
Cool. I've got a few friends who have had them magic potions.
Fantastic.
I'll tell you what, you're looking really good for it, though.
Thank you so much.
You are looking well. It's good to see you looking well.
Thank you.
So, for people who only know you as the one who had a drink and said whatever, what's the version of Thomas that they'd be surprised to know? What would they be surprised to know about you?
I'm a homebird, I'm a family person, I'm a good friend, I'm kind to everyone, I love people, I perform, I speak up for what I believe in. I'm a true through-and-through Scouser. That's what I am.
Yeah. I agree with all of the above. Haven't seen it all. You're a good person, and I could tell you weren't in a good place at times. It's nice to see you back.
Well, I appreciate that.
I love that you've took your mum on. It's not a holiday, it's a working holiday, but that's the sweet spot, isn't it, when you can take your mum to Cyprus for a few
weeks.
They've
come out to see me while I'm here, so they've come out to sort of watch me perform and have a little bit of a holiday and stuff. Our lives are, like, chaotic. Nice. We've only got a very small family, so it's just, like, a bit of a break for them as well.
You're a mental health nurse, and that means you understood, I think, like, distress better than anyone else probably on that cast. Did that training that you had as a, you know, being a professional in mental health, did that survive contact with the TV show, or did it go out the window when the cameras started rolling?
You know, truth be told, I was drunk for most of that show. So really, you know, you're not in work mode. It was very much, I went into the show, I obviously had my confrontations with people, which did isolate me to an extent. And I think that, like, off camera, I didn't have a great deal of interaction with the rest of the cast. There was certain people that I had interactions with, but it wasn't really, I spent a lot of time on my own, which through choice, just because I found it to be quite a toxic environment.
Right.
And I think I sort of was fearful of being, you know, how it was going to be perceived by the public and all of those things. And you do become conscious of that. And for me, because of the way I am, I would struggle to sort of navigate the film and remember that there was even cameras there. I was just really being myself. And I think I was in defense mode.
Yeah. So it's like being, I don't know, is it like being in a state of like siege all the time? Like that all the time? And you start like...
It is really, because you just... ready to go at any time, ready to fight, ready to argue, all of that. We all were.
So I'd call it a serious reckoning happening right now about duty of care on that programme. And without speaking for anyone else's experience, I want to know whether inside the support that was around you, do you think it matched the risk psychologically that the programme inherently has in it?
What I will say is, I will say that from my experience, production and welfare was sensational. They were there immediately when I needed them. They were kind. They offered me alternatives to alcohol. They offered me support with a psychiatrist, psychologist. They asked me if I didn't want to be there anymore. There was absolutely zero pressure put on me by the show or by the team. And I think what we've got to remember is that it still shows like Love Island on, where people have actually taken their lives. And so for this to be like the reckoning for that show, I think we need to reevaluate personal experiences. I think there's a lot of victim blaming going on, which is not fair. And there's a lot of pointing the finger. I think what we need to do is go back to the drawing board and speak to those victims and use their experience to ensure that this doesn't happen again in reality TV, full stop.
Did your drinking get worse after you'd been on the show?
Oh my God, it was like champagne lifestyle. You know, without sounding, again, egotistical in any way, but I came off that show as the most famous person from that show. I do feel like, to a degree, there was taglines and viral moments that I give them. that made me a sort of star. And it feeds your ego. It makes you think, you know, I'm untouchable. So, you know, you're being asked to these events and this, that and the other, and you turn up and you drink to your heart's content and you're a good time gal. And it's just, yeah, the drinking did get a lot worse.
I want to be fair to everyone here, because what you've just described, Thomas, is not the same thing as a lot of the reporting has described. Other contributors have said that there was alcohol freely available, about welfare that didn't catch them when they fell. You're telling me something completely different, and I take that completely, but I want both sides of these things on the record at the same time, because that is in contradiction with what we've heard elsewhere.
Now, I was aware of peers that had said certain things, and that there was, you know, rumours going round from people who were on my series, and you know, there was conversations that happened. There was people in people's rooms talking about how they were going through it and just having a tough time. And I think that a lot of it for me personally was just, we were in COVID. People were isolated. Everyone was a bit chaotic. There was a lot of drink involved that we absolutely supplied ourselves and was not supplied by the show. I'd just like to say that as well.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of blame.
Somewhere else that there was a lot of alcohol provided by the show, but you're saying in your case it had nothing to do with that.
That is absolutely not true. And to speak to welfare for me within a 5-minute window, they were at my door if I needed them at any time. I'm not going to diss them.
Right.
The producers, everything, they were incredible with me. They were kind to me, and they provided me with alcohol-free alternatives because they knew that I'd said, I don't really want to drink, I'm struggling here, I was sometimes too pissed to film. They wouldn't put me on camera if that was the case. They offered me support, they offered me help, they asked me if I wanted to leave. There was no sort of mongering of me to be this drunken mess on TV. They didn't do that, and I can't blame them. They were incredibly supportive of me, and from what I seen where other people had conversations with them, they were incredibly supportive to them as well. So I think that finger pointing where welfare is concerned, or you know, blaming them people is completely unfair in my experience.
So where's the problem with the programme then? You've said that I've been through a Channel 4 reality thing where you get sent to you do a couple of Zooms at the psychologist, don't you? Then another one, you're back and forth. And my own experience, I never went on, I won't say what show it was, but I never went on it in the end. But I felt like looking back, I'm not going to say lied to, but I was definitely being sort of hoodwinked to, you should come on. And I just felt like there was just, for me, going through that, I felt that you're not lied to, but you certainly very much manipulated
in some sense, right?
Yeah.
I think that there's a job, isn't there, for people to do, and their job is to cast you and make a show that's fantastic. And I think that we also have to sort of take a step back and go, I'm an adult here who's consenting to put my whole life on TV. And I think that when I went through that process of being cast, I was cast very, very quickly from basically a phone call, right. Really.
Yeah.
Because I was giving them what they wanted.
Course.
And I think people are naturally made for TV. They're naturally made to be reality stars or whatever situation that is. And I think Scouse people in general are funny, they're outgoing, they're willing to get involved. And I think it just sort of was the timing was, I seen the show as sort of a savior for me, trying to take time away from life that where I was taking drugs and drinking, and it actually made it worse. But that's not down to anyone but me.
Yeah,
you know, I went to the shop, I bought the wine, I drank the wine, I'm an adult. And I think that we can't blame everyone else. We really can't. You do consent to these things. You consent to being on the show. I think where there needs to be stuff that's looked at is for these victims that are, you know, going through what they've gone through. I think there needs to be more support for them, but I can't speak to that experience.
Was there a focus by the show's producers and production team? I've read that from the top to the bottom, and this may or may not be correct, this is quotes I've read from people, that there's a real focus on, are they having sex? There's a real focus on, an unnatural focus on whether or not people taking part in the show were having sex, and some people felt pressurised, and that, you know, you're sticking people who've not met each other before in a domestic environment and going, off you go. And for me, that seems fraught with risk to me.
I mean, it's fraught with risk, isn't it? I think that we can all attest to that. I think for me, I didn't share about it with my partner, so I can't contest to that at all. And they were very aware that there was absolutely no romantic connection at all. I think for him, you know, he really wanted to be on the show and he wanted something really fruitful to come from it. And that's absolutely fine. You know, we all have different reasons for going on. But for me, I didn't feel that pressure regarding sex or anything like that. No, I didn't. I think for others, that may be their experience. But for me, I don't recall at any point being asked about sex or anything like that, other than once by the experts, which again, is their job to explore the relationship. And part of a relationship is, you know,
consensual sex, you're about to say then, right?
Consensual sex, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And listening to the other people who have, you know, spoken of their experience, I think it's really, really troubling that they didn't feel that they had that support or that at the time they could go and speak to someone or whatever the case might be. I don't think, again, that it should be time stamped where we're like, well, you should have said it there and then. No, you shouldn't. You should say it when you feel comfortable to say it.
Yeah, and you don't know when you're going to feel the things you're going to feel, do you? Especially, I don't know, especially if you're drunk.
No, you absolutely don't.
You know? Especially
and sometimes there's not a realization. There's not a realization in the moment that that's happened to you. I think it's important that we listen to the victims and we don't comment and we don't pass remark and we don't be cruel to people who've been through this.
Oh no, completely, completely. Do you think there's changes need to be made to shows like this? Would you go on one again? There's two questions. Would you think there should be changes made to shows like this? And then tell me, would you go on it again afterwards?
Okay, I think the changes need to be that we're sitting down and having serious conversations with people and that we are not putting them in situations where there's risk posed like that. I don't think that the putting people living in apartments together thing works. I think it's dangerous.
Interesting.
I really do.
Yeah, I mean, and that's
the
format.
The proof is in the pudding for that. I think it's dangerous. And I think you also are putting two people who may not even want to be in the same environment together, and it creates hostility. Not only does it pose that risk, but it creates hostility. So I think what needs to happen is we need people who've experienced this to come in on an advisory basis so that we can change the process, so that we can allow the people who've actually experienced it to have input into how it's run.
Yeah.
I think that's what's needed. Would I go on a show again? I would do a show again because I'm a different person today than I was then.
Would you do that one? Would you do
for 50k, yeah.
For 50k. Yeah, for Farage star money, yeah, I'll do anything.
For a lot of money, I would do it, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Do another TV show that, yeah.
You would? Do you think this show should still be on?
I would do it, yeah. I love the show. I love the show. As a viewer, I love the show. Specifically the Australian one. I think it's sensational TV.
Everyone loves that one, yeah.
However, yeah. I think what needs to happen is that we do really need to look at all of these reality shows again. We need to really, really look at them. And I think that we need some time where it's not on TV. To really ensure the safety of the people who are contributing to it.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's all what's paramount here. I think it really is.
Thomas, a.k.a. Pam Sandwich, from a very warm Cyprus this morning. Thank you for that. Really appreciate that chat.
And don't forget, before you turn the record off, that I am the host of Liverpool Pride on the 24th and 25th of July. So I hope to see you there.
I didn't know this. Host of Liverpool Pride. It's back.
My love, shouldn't you? Yeah, it's back in the arena with the Sugar Babes.
Oh, it's big again, because last time I checked in, it stopped. So it's come back. It's come back proper and big.
Yeah, it's come back. And it's come back and it's in the hands of the community. It's in the hands of Sahir House, the oldest LGBTQIA charity in the country. And I just think it's just fab. In the city, not the country. Sorry, I'm making false.
They do some incredible stuff as well at Sahir House, a lot of work for HIV and all really that over the do. Years, it's, so I've got a lot of respect
really
for them.
Really is fantastic, yeah.
All right, well, good luck with that. I mean, if I can be there, I will be. I haven't been to Liverpool Pride for about 10 years.
You should be there, because you're a Scouser. You should be there, love.
I know, showing me face. I know. I felt devastated last year when it was cancelled.
Bring it home.
Bring it home. Get on that train. All right, thank you. I appreciate your time, love. All right.
I appreciate yours as well. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, love.
Queer politics, sex, and culture. Outcast World.